All right. Good morning to everybody. Everybody has a Tanakh? We have a few. I found a stash of extra Tanakhs in the library. So with Shelley's permission, we're going to borrow them from time to time to make sure that we have Tanakhs for people. You just count before and after? Mordechai, you're in charge of counting before and after. If you have a library Tanakh, just make sure it stays here after. Last week, we started to do a walkthrough of where Yehoshua comes from. Where do we find Yehoshua? What is his role? Before we start Sefer Yehoshua, we looked at one or two psukim, but before we really start the Sefer in earnest, the background on Yehoshua as an individual, as in his relationship to Moshe, as a leader, what kind of leader, positions in which we find him, the role that he plays, all of that is significant. And it will become even more significant as we begin our study of the Sefer itself, because much of who Yehoshua was as a person in the time of Moshe plays a critical role in terms of who Yehoshua is on his own in the Sefer itself. So we started with a walkthrough of everywhere we see Yehoshua in Tanakh, or in Chumash. The first place, just to do a quick review, the first place we find Yehoshua is in the Battle of Amalek. Yehoshua is the individual who Moshe turns to lead the army, to lead the fight, to lead the battle. V'yomer Moshe el Yehoshua, b'char lanu anashim v'tzei v'ilachem ba'amalek. Moshe turns to Yehoshua, tells him, go and fight against Amalek. So the first role in which we find Yehoshua is that of a warrior, a general, a commander, a military role. We also have to notice, because it's going to be the subject of today's discussion, the fact that he's called Yehoshua. He's called Yehoshua, even though we know later, just because we've studied Chumash in circular fashion, we know that his name is changed, or at least recorded, in the context of the story of the spies. That is a year later in the Chumash terms, from Shmot to Sefer Bamidbar in book terms. That is a question that needs to be addressed. The next place we found Yehoshua was at Matan Torah. Context of the story of Matan Torah, Yehoshua appears in a number of places. Yehoshua is described as Mishartó, Moshe's disciple, his student, his assistant, minister, shamish, however you want to describe it. He is called Misharet Moshe, and that's a title that he maintains essentially throughout Chumash. In fact, that's the title that is given to him in the opening sentence of Sefer Yehoshua. Vahi acharei mot Moshe eved Hashem, after the death of Moshe, servant of God, vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua ben Nun misharet Moshe lemor. God spoke to Yehoshua ben Nun misharet Moshe. So that title of the misharet, the assistant, the servant of the loyal servant of Moshe, that's the title that stays with him even until the opening verses of Sefer Yehoshua. Briefly, we looked at the role that Yehoshua plays in the story, in the context of Matan Torah, including the fact that it surprises us to see that Moshe does not go up the mountain alone. We made the observation that at least part of the way Yehoshua goes with him. If he can't go all the way up the mountain, at least partially, he leaves the camp with Moshe. He waits for Moshe at the base of wherever he's entitled to go. When Moshe comes back down the mountain after the sin of the golden calf, Yehoshua is waiting for him. Yehoshua is not part of the community. He's not sitting amongst the people. He's as surprised at the story of Chet HaEgel. He's as surprised as Moshe is. He doesn't know what's going on. The third part of the Matan Torah phenomenon is that in the aftermath of Chet HaEgel, before God forgives Israel and we have the building of the Mishkan, there's a story in which Moshe takes his tent, takes it outside of the rest of the camp, pitches it separate from the camp, calls it the Ohel Moed. the Shechina, the Ananea Kavod, the clouds of God's glory, hovers over Moshe's tent. And if the people want to come to the Shechina, so to speak, Kaviyachol, they come to Moshe's tent. Moshe stands outside the tent to speak to the people, turns around, goes back to the tent. And there it says, Umisharto Yehoshua Benun Na'ar Lo Yamish Mitocha Or. His Misharet, Yehoshua Benun Na'ar, the lad, the young man, the young Yehoshua, Lo Yamish Mitocha Or, does not move from the tent. Did not leave it. In other words, the only person allowed to enter into Moshe's tent with the Shechina there was Yehoshua. So from the very beginning, there is this teacher-disciple, master-servant relationship that is quite remarkable and unique. Yehoshua is able to enter into places that no one else can go because Yehoshua doesn't move. He is Moshe's right-hand man, literally, and doesn't move from that position. That's the introduction to Yehoshua. Then we find Yehoshua in all kinds of different places throughout Chumash. The Meraglim, which we'll come back to. The story of the spies. Hoshea ben Nun is appointed the representative of Shevet Ephraim. Hoshea ben Nun is the grandson of the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim, Elishama ben Amihud. And Moshe changes his name to Yehoshua. Assuming, as we will work with for now, assuming Rashi's interpretation of that episode, his name is Hoshea until the story of the Meraglim. Moshe changes his name at the story of the Meraglim in order to give him a little bit of an extra boost. Kayoshiacha me'atzat Meraglim, God should protect you, God should go with you. He adds the Yud Hey to Yehoshua's name. We'll come back to that in a few moments. Did we talk about the end, where Yehoshua is appointed? The reference is there. All right, I think that's where we left off. So briefly, a couple of additional sources for where we find Yehoshua. Bamidbar, chapter 27. This is already towards the end of the 40 years. Starting with verse 15, Pasuk Tetvav, Vayedaber Moshe al Hashem Lemor, Moshe says to God, V'yifkod Hashem Elokei Haruchot L'cho Basar Ish al Ha'eda. God, master of the spirit of all flesh, should appoint a person over the congregation. Moshe knows he's about to die. He is no longer going to be able to lead Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, and he turns to God in a moment of great humility. And really, it's quite a remarkable dialogue, because Moshe's whole life dream was to enter into Eretz Yisrael with Bnei Yisrael. He knows he can't, and his concern turns to the appointment of a successor. Ashi yetzel lifnehem v'ashi yavo lifnehem. Somebody who will go out and somebody who will come in. For those who were at the shul last night, I mentioned this last night as well. The expression latzet v'lavo is a military expression. Latzet v'lavo means to go out and come back in the context of battle. V'ashi yotziem v'ashi yaviem. Somebody will take them out and bring them back. If you don't understand that that's a military expression, this sentence is redundant. Who will go out and come back and bring them out and bring them back. What are we talking about? If you understand it in the context of a tzava, then you realize that for to go out and come back means to be a warrior, and to lead them and to bring them back means to lead the army. God's God's people, your congregation, should not be like a flock of sheep without a shepherd. Very powerful image, because it takes us back to when Moshe was appointed as the leader of Israel. Moshe starts his career as a shepherd. And that imagery has never left him. The very end of his life, turns to God. This is 100 years later. His early years in Midian, he was 20 years old. Now he's 120. And he says to God, they still need a shepherd. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, tach lecha et Yehoshua ben Nun. God says to Moshe, fine, take Yehoshua ben Nun. Ish asher ruach bo. A man in whom there is ruach. What is ruach? Spirit. Ruach HaKodesh, Ruach Hashem. Whatever it was that made Moshe tick, is Yehoshua has a part of it. V'samachta et yadcha alav. Place your hands over him. It's a form of smicha. By the way, this is the source for the concept of smicha. And this is the biblical source for the concept of smicha. Smicha means what we call ordination, but really it comes from the expression smichat yadayim, because the original form in which the role of smicha was transmitted from Moshe down to the generations was through a ceremonial smichat yadayim, placing the hands over the disciples' head and transferring to them symbolically the mantle of leadership. In Moshe's case, it was more than a symbolic gesture, as we'll see in a moment. V'ha'amadata oto lifnei Elazar ha'kohen v'lifnei kol ha'eda v'tzivita oto le'enehem. Stand him before the Kohen Gadol, Elazar. Stand him before the people. V'natata mehodcha alav. And place from your hod, take your hod and place from it, place a part of it on him. What does that mean? What is hod?
Greatness,
majesty, glory, ruach, spirit. There's a transfer here that's more than just symbolic. Ruach HaKodesh, Ruach Hashem, Mehodcha, from your spirit, your glory. Leman Yishmu Kol Adat B'nei Yisrael. So that all of Israel should see. In other words, this ceremonial transmission of leadership from Moshe to Yeshua is significant on a number of levels. Number one, Moshe is the one to do it. Moshe has to appoint his own successor, as painful to Moshe as that may be. Number two, it's critical for the people to see that transmission of leadership.
Here it says, hear them.
Excuse me?
Yishma'u.
Yishma'u, the man Yishma'u, it's essentially the same thing, but it's critical for the people to understand that Yehoshua's role is A, mandated and sanctioned by God, but maybe even more importantly, as funny as that may sound, that it has the approval of Moshe. Moshe is a figure far larger than life to Bnei Israel. For all intents and purposes, he's the only leader these people have ever known. This is the generation that grew up in the Midbar. Moshe is everything to them. And if the generation that left Egypt and stood at Sinai after 40 days of Moshe's absence could slip into the golden calf, can you imagine what would happen to a generation whose only leader they ever knew was Moshe after Moshe dies? It's a very, very frightening moment. It's frightening for Bnei Israel. It's frightening for the leadership, for the Sanhedrin, for the Kohen. Nobody knows what's going to be. Even Moshe doesn't know what's going to be. He turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam and he says, Yafked Hashem Elokeinu Chol L'chol Basar Ish Al Ha'eda. Ribbono Shel Olam, you need to appoint a successor. You can't have a flock without a shepherd. So instead of just saying to Moshe, fine, take Yehoshua, tell him you're it, there is a public ceremonial transfer of leadership, a smichat yadayim, from which the principle of smicha from generation to generation, rabbinic smicha, derives itself. That Yehoshua is now authorized by, or empowered, not necessarily by God, because that's maybe true, but to the people, that doesn't speak quite as loudly and as profoundly as authorized by Moshe. By sanctioned by Moshe, as encouraged by Moshe.
It wasn't anything you said.
Oh, okay. Well,
it wasn't what you said.
I don't know. Two come in and three go out. I'm not sure that there's a pattern here, but. And then it goes on. V'lifnei Elazar Kohen yamod v'sha'alo b'mishpat ha'orim lifnei Hashem. He will stand before the Kohen Gadol. This is significant in terms of the role of a leader. The role of Moshe and the role of Yoshua is essentially as close to the role of a melech as we're going to get before we have a melech. You will not find a role closer. They are, for all intents and purposes, the king of Israel. And this individual, this whether it be in this case Yoshua, must stand before the Kohen Gadol, must stand before Elazar Kohen, v'sha'alo b'mishpat ha'orim lifnei Hashem, and he must seek guidance from the Urim. What is the Urim? Or the Urim v'tumim? At the breastplate of the high priest, there is a communication that takes place between God and the Kohen Gadol through the breastplate of the Big Day Kohuna. And the king is mandated to acknowledge and to seek that authorization and guidance. The king is not all-powerful. The king has to follow the authority of the Kohen Gadol. Al-piv yetzu ve'al-piv yavo'u. There's that expression again. On his authority, namely the mouth of the Urim v'Tumim, on that authority, I'm in Bamidbar Perek Chavzayim. On his authority, the king, the Yoshua, can take them out and bring them in. Again, referring to war. And another whole domain in Halakha derived from this verse is the fact that the king has to seek the authorization of the Kohen Gadol, of the Urim v'Tumim, before he takes the people into battle. Something which we'll see in Yehoshua in a number of different places, in Sefer Shoftim and in Shmuel. Some places it says so explicitly, in other places it's just assumed. But there is a relationship between the authorization for war and the Urim V'Tumim. L'havdil, the president needs to go to Congress to declare war. In the time of Tanakh, the king had to go to the Urim V'Tumim. L'havdil. And that's exactly what happens. Vayas Moshe kasher tziva Hashem oto. Moshe does exactly as God instructed him. Veikachak Yehoshua vayamduhu lifnei Elazar HaKohen lifnei Haida. Takes Yehoshua, stands him before the congregation, places his hands over him. Vayismochet yadav alav vayitzaveu. He places his hands over him. He instructs him as God had instructed him. Tasher diber Hashem biyad Moshe. Very powerful image. It's from this image that you will place from your glory upon him. Chazal make the following observation, very interesting midrashic phraseology. You will place from your glory on him. What is mehodcha? The mem, grammatically, there is a subset, mehodcha, from your hod. Whatever hod means, majesty, glory, honor, cover, whatever the translation is, but the mem means from, which means we could have simply said, venatata hodcha alav, take your crown and place it upon him. It's not a crown, it's hod. Hod is a much more definable substance. So me'otcha means from your glory, says the Medrash, v'lo kol hodcha, from your glory and not all of it. What are they getting at? So Medrash continues and says, Nimtzeinu lemedim pnei Moshe kepnei Chama upnei Yehoshua kepnei Levana. From here we derive that Moshe's face shone like the sun and Yehoshua's like the moon. What does that mean? Well, before we get to the reflection issue, because I don't think Chazal knew that the moon of the sun, the light of the moon, is a reflection of the light of the sun. Remember, that's a modern scientific fact. They didn't know that, and that's the power of this medrash. That's how we often translate it, but Chazal had no concept that the light of the moon is a reflection of the light of the sun. But what they did know is that the light of the sun is the Ma'or HaGadol, and the light of the moon is the Ma'or HaKaton. One is greater and one is smaller. And so what they're essentially saying is that Me'otcha means that Yeshua is a diminutive of Moshe. That Yeshua is nowhere near the size of the luminary that Moshe is. If Moshe's light can be compared to the sun, so Yeshua's light can be compared to the moon. Me'otcha. But the fascinating thing about Midrashei Chazal is that in every generation they'll take on a whole new meaning. And the reality is that that same analogy from the same source is that the power, the authority, the brightness of Yeshua actually emanates as an offshoot of Moshe. It is Moshe who places his hod upon Yeshua, and so it's very easy to jump into the other side of that midrashic source, which is that while Yeshua's light may be smaller than Moshe's, it is also true that its majesty and its brightness shines because of Moshe. That's a very interesting double layer of interpretation to a midrashic source. That clearly Chazal had no intention of imbuing into this famous expression, but it happens to be true. It's a very beautiful example. That's Yeshua here. So at this point, it's officially designated Yeshua is going to be the successor to Moshe. Two more instances where we find Yeshua in Chumash. One is in Bamidbar, in chapter 34. Starting with Pasuk Tet Zayin, verse 16, by the Ber Hashem or Moshe Lemor, Eile Shmota Anashim Asher Yinchalu Lachem Et Haaretz. In the division of the land of Israel, from Bamidbar chapter 34, Perek Lamed Daled, Pasuk Tet Zayin 16. In the division of the land of Israel, there was a ceremonial. I'm not so sure how ceremonial it is. There was a process by which they would use some kind of a lottery or some kind of a lot to divide the land. We will talk about it in much more detail in Yoshua, because it's instructed here, but it actually takes place in Sefer Yoshua. But there it says, Eile Shmota Anashim Asher Yinchalu Lachem Et Haaretz. These are the people who will stand before you when you divide the land. First of all, the land will be divided by two leaders, namely Elazar HaKohen, Yeshua ben Nun, which makes sense. The division of the land had to be endorsed both by the political leadership, political slash military leadership, as well as by the religious leadership. If you didn't have both, you have a recipe for disaster. If you divided the land of Israel by political and military leadership without the spiritual endorsement, you're going to get an objection. And if you divided it purely, if Elazar Kohen were to come and divide the land based purely on the instructions of the Urim V'Tumim, you can only imagine what the military leadership would say.
So it was very different?
There's a partnership between them. Mm-hmm. But that partnership is critical. That partnership carries through. Remember that from... I don't know if we spoke about this much. We certainly haven't here, but we will, if not in Yeshua, and certainly in Shoftim. The Torah's model of leadership is set out in Parshat Shoftim. Parshat Shoftim, as a parsha in the Torah, is all about leadership. And the Torah puts forward four modes of leadership and the relationship between them. Kohen, the Shafet, the Navi, Kohen, the Shafet, and the Melech. In the order, Shafet, Kohen, Melech, Navi. I don't remember the order. The order is not significant. It's the relationship between them that's significant. Right? And they all correlate. It's the oldest system of checks and balances in political leadership. American Jefferson didn't invent it. But the process is fascinating. The Kohen has to go to the Kohen Gadol, the Navi has to goes to the Melech. There's a whole correlation, there's a triangle between them. Yoshua is the Melech, Elazar Kohen is the Kohen Gadol. They stand before the people together. Before they go into war, who speaks to the people? Who gives them a pep talk? The Kohen. Not the general, not the Melech, the Kohen. Because there's a religious component to every battle that has to be endorsed, it has to be sanctioned by the Kohen Gadol, by the Urim V'Tumim. There's a dynamic there. So that's part of the reason why the land of Israel had to be divided by a combination of Yehoshua and Elazar. And then, Nasi Echad, Mimateh, Tikhul, Mecholot Ha'aretz. And then you had to take one person from each tribe. The Nasi of each tribe, this is 40 years later, a different set of Nasiim, but the Nasi of each tribe was also necessary because, again, they're dividing the land of Israel according to the tribes. You have to have representation from each tribe. You have to have the buy-in, otherwise it's not going to work. Otherwise you're going to get disputes. And one of the fascinating things about the division of the land of Israel, completely tangential to our discussion of Yehoshua, but it's interesting to note, there is no dispute, or virtually no dispute, that ever develops in Tanakh over where the borders of one tribe are against another. You would think the single most contentious issue in world politics, which is borders, and you're dividing one small strip of land into 12 borders, and nowhere in Sefer, in Tanakh, is this a dispute between split between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, but there is virtually no border dispute between the markation lines of one tribe over another.
Maybe because they felt it was ordained by God.
Well, I think it's partially because you have this buy-in of all of the different components, the Nesiim and the Melech and the Kohen, and they're all interconnected. I think that's very much part of why you don't have that. But it's a fascinating phenomenon. You would think that under normal rules of political development, that's the most likely scenario or the most likely source of conflict. Finally, two more sources, and then we can go back to the question I raised at the end of the shiur last week. Anybody remember the question I raised at the end of the shiur last week? You have to answer last week's question. Anybody remember what it was? No? I don't have to answer it if we don't remember what it was. What was the question I left? I said two more sources, and then we have to answer the question I left off with last week. Does anybody remember what it was? The question is, if his name is changed in the story of the Meraglim, how can we find him called Yehoshua before? That was the question. All right. We need two more sources before we can answer that question. One is Dvarim Lamed Aleph. Now we're into the last Sefer. The end of Moshe's life, literally the last day of his life. A long speech of Sefer Dvarim. We come to the end, Perek Lamed Aleph, chapter 31. Starting from the beginning of the chapter. Vayelech Moshe vayedaber tavrim ha'ele al kol Yisrael. Beginning of Pashat Vayelech, Moshe goes and he speaks these things to Bnei Yisrael. Vayomer alehem, he said to them, Ben me'av yasrim shana anochi hayom. I am 120 years old today. The word today is the source that Chazal used to derive the fact that Moshe died on his birthday. Lo uchal od latzet velavo. It's that expression again. I can no longer be your leader. Hashem amar elai lo tavor et hayarden hazeh. Moshe started the battle, the conquest of Canaan with Sichon and Og, but he's not entitled to continue. He can't cross the Jordan. Hashem elokech ahu avel lefanecha. God will lead you into battle. Hu yashmidet hagoyim elim lefanecha. God will take away your enemies. Vireshtam, and you will inherit their land. Yoshua. Who over lefanecha kashe diber Hashem? Yehoshua will lead you, as God has instructed. Pasuk Zayin. Vayikra Moshe Yoshua Vayomer Elav Leinei Kol Yisrael. Who asked me before about seeing versus hearing? Right. Moshe calls Yoshua over in the eyes of all of Israel, and he says to him, Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and courageous, because you are going to have to deal with these people and their complaints. Now that's not what he says. Ki ata tavot ha'am hazeh la'aretz asher nishba Hashem la'avotam latet lehem. You will take this people over into the land that God has promised. V'ata tanchilen otam, you will let them, cause them to inherit it. You will fight this battle for them. V'Hashem hu alech lefanecha hu yiyeh imach. God will go before you. God will be with you. Lo yapecha v'lo yazvecha. He will not let you falter. He will not abandon you. Lo tina v'lo techat. Don't be afraid. Yoshua, chazak v'yematz. Be strong and be courageous. Another phrase we have to remember, because we will see it three times in the opening chapter of Yehoshua. Skip down a few psukim. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, you'll see it again. Verse 23, Vayetzav et Yehoshua Benun. Vayomer, he commands Yehoshua Benun, he says to him, Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and courageous. Ki atah tavir b'nei Yisrael al ha'aretz asher nishbati lehem anochi yeyimach. This is already God commanding Yehoshua, be strong, you will take these people into the land of Israel, which I have instructed. So far, we find Yehoshua as a military leader in the very beginning of his career. We find him as a disciple of Moshe. We find him as the Nasi, chosen as the representative of his tribe, chosen to lead the people, to join the mission of the spies. We find him chosen as the successor to Yehoshua, to Moshe. Ceremony of Smichat Yadayim, transfer the mantle of leadership. And Moshe encourages him here to be strong and courage, and have courage. In all of these instances, he is known or identified to us as
just a quick review. Mechamet Amalek. Mamar HaSinai, the tent, right? Ohel, Moshe, or Yeshua, or is he known as Misharet Moshe, minister to Moshe, Worth Amalek, Mamar HaSinai, the tent. Who else? How else is he? Where else did we see him? Chet Ha'egel is here. Meraglim is going to be here, where he's called Hoshea, and Moshe changes his name to Yehoshua. But he's first identified to us as Hoshea. When the Nesi'im are listed, Lishmashtei Ephraim, Hoshea bin Nun, and then at the end it says, and God, and Moshe called him Yehoshua. Vayikra Moshe leHoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. Last two instances. Ceremony of Smicha, the anointment of, or the designation of Yehoshua as the leader, and
transition.
The transition. Right? The final Chazak ve'ematz. Actually, there's one more, and that is Chalukat Ha'aretz. Divide the land. Moshe's instructions to Yeshua as to how to divide the land.
The last source I want to look at before we can start putting the pieces together is chapter 34 of Devarim. Shirat HaZinu comes in the middle. Sorry, chapter 32. Not 34. Chapter 32. There is a chapter 34, but we're not there. Chapter 32, Shirat HaAzinu, the whole song is recorded. Right after the Shira, the first verse after the Shira. 44, Mem Dalet. Vayavo Moshe, Moshe came and he spoke these words to the children of Israel, the entire Shira. Who? The Hoshea bin Nun. Whoa. We are in trouble now. These are the only two references to Yehoshua as Hoshea in all of Chumash. In fact, in all of Tanakh. And they raise an enormous difficulty for us. Working with Rashi's assumption, Moshe calls Hoshea, Yehoshua, in the context of the story of the spies, the story of the miracle. Why, therefore, does he call him, why is he known as, or referred to as Hoshea when he reads Shirat HaAzinu before the people? And why is he called Yehoshua before the miracle?
1, 2, 3.
So Rashi, to be consistent, Rashi, you have it. Do you have the source page from last week? If you don't have it, I have extra copies here. Let me just pass them back. Just take one and pass them back. Source number 7. Rashi, to be consistent, says, in the end of this Rashi, V'lama koro kan Yehoshea, why is he called Hoshea here? L'mar shelo zacha dato alav, sha'af api shenitna lo gdula, and even though Moshe was according Yehoshua great honor here by including him in this public declaration of Shirat HaAzinu, Yehoshua felt the humility to identify himself as Hoshea as he was known originally, sort of as an expression of humility. The problem is he's called Yehoshua throughout the rest of Chumash. Where's the humility the rest of the time? If it's a function of humility, then every time he's referred to as Yehoshua, he should be called Hoshea. Moshe called him Yehoshua, but he didn't want that title. He didn't want Shem Hashem identified with his name, so he called himself Hoshea, even though Moshe calls him Yehoshua. It's a very inconsistent interpretation. It's necessary because Rashi is faced with a tremendous difficulty. His name was changed at the moment of the Meraglim. Then from that point forward, he should be called Yehoshua. And beforehand, he should be called Hoshea. When Abraham's name is changed, up until his name change, he's called Avraham. From his name change, he's called Avraham. But this haphazard back and forth is inconsistent and problematic. So what I would like to suggest to you is a completely... Ezra has even a... somewhat more radical interpretation. He says that nobody knew him as Yehoshua. Everybody knew him as Hoshea. Only Moshe called him on Yehoshua. So here he stood before the people. He called the Torah uses the name Hoshea because that's how the people refer to him. I leave that for now. I'm not quite sure I know what to do with the evidence. But I would suggest something else. And I want to go back to another possibility altogether. So back to the Rashbam, which is source number 6. Rashbam says something remarkable. Again, in the context of the Meraglim, it says that the Nasi chosen is Hoshea ben Nun, and Moshe calls him Yehoshua. Rashi tells me, why did Moshe change his name? Because, why did Moshe change his name?
To protect him.
Not here. Why in the Meraglim did Moshe change his name? To protect him from the sin of the Meraglim, which raises enormous theological issues. The possibility that Moshe knew in advance that this mission was doomed to failure. He needs to protect Yehoshua. Well, if he needs to protect Yehoshua, why doesn't he protect Kalev also? And if he knows that it's going to be doomed to failure, why does he send them in the first place? It's an interpretation that is fraught with difficulty. Hashbam takes a completely different approach. And he says, Veikram Moshe Lo'osheh Binun, Lo Atak Kara Otokeh. Moshe didn't change his name here in the story of the miracle. Sharei Kvar Kodem Lachen Nikra Yehoshua. He's called Yehoshua back in Parshat Shlach, back in Parshat Beshalach. He's called Yehoshua in Parshat Yitro. He's called Yehoshua in Matan Torah. He's always known as Yehoshua. Moshe didn't change his name here at the miracle. Alakach Pirusho, this is what it, how you have to understand it. Hoshea bin Nun, she'amarnu lamala shenikra ken bevet aviv, when he was chosen as the head of the household tribes of Shevet Ephraim, he was known by his household name, his family name. His parents didn't name him Yehoshua. His parents named him Hoshea. Hu oto shekara Moshe Yehoshua. The Torah is telling us that when it went through the list of the Nisiyim at the story of the Meraglim, it identified the head of Shevet Ephraim as Hoshea bin Nun. We need to know that that's the same Yehoshua that we are familiar with already from Parshat Beshalach and from Parshat Yitro and Parshat Kitisa. We need to know that it's the same man, because his name had been changed by Moshe and he had been renamed Yehoshua. Excuse me? Why? So now the question is, at what point was his name changed and why? So Ibn Ezra continues and says, Shekarash Moshe Yehoshua, Moshe calls him Yehoshua, Kishina Asa Misharto, when Hoshea took on the position of the Misharet Moshe, the disciple of Moshe, Moshe changed his name. Bifkido Beto, when Moshe appointed Yehoshua to be the leader of his household, Shekach hu haya minhagam. That was the standard practice. That was the custom. And he identifies a number of examples. For example, Vayikra Paro Shem Yosef Tzafnat Paneach. What does Paro do to Yosef the moment he appoints him over his household? He changes his name. He changes his name to Tzafnat Paneach. Why? So Rashi says, again, consistent with Rashi's interpretation, that there needs to be some local reason for the name change. Rashi says that he didn't want him to have a Jewish name, so he gave him an Egyptian name. Rashban's understanding is, it's got nothing to do with a Jewish name versus an Egyptian name. It has to do with the practice of a master to rename a servant. And in so doing, you establish a loyalty and an identity. The servant's name was given to him by the master, the disciple by the teacher. Another example, Vayikrale Daniel Belshazzar, when Daniel is appointed to the court of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar changes his name from Daniel to Belshazzar. Again, either because it's a Hebrew name versus to an Aramaic name, or because it's a servant of the king. And as a servant of the king, you need a royal name identified in the court of the king.
It seems that you change the relationship between
it enhances it. It links the two in a way that connects their souls. How is he defined? How has Yehoshua defined himself all the years? As Misharet Moshe. He's willingly subservient to Moshe. Moshe is his master. That's what a disciple is. That's what an apprentice is. Yehoshua is Moshe's apprentice. And therefore Moshe is his master. Don't forget there's 45 years between them, at least. Of course he's subservient to Moshe. Who wouldn't be? That's the role he takes on. Misharet Moshe. Moshe is Eved Hashem. Yehoshua is Misharet Moshe. Moshe is the servant of God. Yehoshua is the servant of Moshe. No question. And that loyalty, that linkage, is expressed through this change of name. I'll show you two more examples besides the two that the Rashbam identifies I'll show you two more examples which I think are actually much closer to home in the context of Yeshua and Moshe. Two questions. The Rashbam. Rashi's grandson. Which actually, in the context of the Pshat, I think makes much more sense, and I'll show you why I say that in a moment. Yes?
Also, isn't its purpose is not just to establish a link with the person who does the naming, but it also is an advertisement to everybody else. So when you give somebody a name, what you're saying is everybody else in public, you see that I am linked to this other person.
100%. It is an expression of loyalty. We wear it as a badge. It's a badge of identity. I belong or express loyalty to, or I'm loyal to my master. And in this case, it would have been Moshe. I'll show you two more examples. Take a look at the very end of the Book of Kings, Sefer Malachim. We're jumping close to 1,000 years almost in biblical history, but that's okay. We'll do that a lot. Chapter 23 of Gimel, starting with verse 31, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. The end of the Book of Kings, the end of the Kingdom of Israel, is a time of great political turmoil. The sovereignty of the Jewish state has essentially been taken over by the two major empires at the time, Egypt in the south and Babel in the north. And whatever king is appointed to the throne of Israel is nothing more than a vassal state to the ruling empire. We have a king, we have a sovereignty in name only, but essentially there's a tug of war going on between Egypt and Babel over the status of Israel. And the way that tug of war manifests itself is that you have the appointment of the king of Israel taking place by designation of king of Egypt or the king of Babel. Fascinating piece of history. Ben Esrim Shalosh Shana Yehoahaz Bim Malcho Shlosha Chodeshim Malach B'Yishalayim. King by the name of Yehoahaz reigns for 3 months. Why does he only reign for 3 months? Because he gets killed or captured by Paro of Egypt. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Ve'yasreu Paro Necho Berivla Ba'eretz Chamat Mimloch B'Yushalayim. Because Paro Necho, Paro the cripple, Paro from Egypt, comes and he takes the king of Israel, takes him in irons and sends him down to Egypt. Punishes the land. Pasuk Lamed Dalid. Vayamlech Paro Necho et Eliakim ben Yoshiyahu tachat Yoshiyahu Aviv. Paro Necho appoints the next king of Israel. You understand that if Paro is appointing the king of Israel, then who is the king loyal to? Who does he owe his allegiance to? Paro. Right? He takes, but obviously Paro, if he wants to maintain control in the land of Israel, he needs to appoint a successor to the throne that the people are going to recognize as a successor to the throne. So he appoints the son of the old king Yoshiyahu. But because Paro appointed him, his allegiance is to Paro. Now you want to solidify that allegiance? Look at the next word. Vayasev et shmo Yehoyakim. He changes his name from Eliakim to Yehoyakim. Minor change in name, not significant Jewishly, but Hebrew Aramaic. But the very act of changing his name means your allegiance and your loyalty is to me. Go down a few verses to chapter 24, verse 17. Chavdalad Pasuk Yud Zayin. Next piece of it. Next generation. A couple of years later, Yehoyachin is appointed by the king of Babel. Yehoyakim is appointed by the king of Egypt. Next king, there's a war between Babel and Egypt going on over control of the land of Israel. This tug of war goes back and forth. Now it's Babel's turn. Babel takes the king of Israel, exiles one king, Yehoyachin, takes him down to Egypt, and Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayamlech et Melech Babel et Matanya Dodo Tachtav, and he appoints as king his uncle, again from the royal family, a man by the name of Matanya. And what is the first thing he does? Vayasev etshmo Tzidkiyahu. He changes his name from Matanya to Tzidkiyahu. Now, it's almost the same name. Matanya means gift of God. Tzidkiyahu means righteous one of God. He's not giving him an Egyptian name or a Babylonian name or changing it from Yosef to Tzafna Panach. It's a name that includes God's name. There's no religious significance to this name change, but there is enormous political significance to this name change. The allegiance is to the king of Babel who anointed him, or appointed him. In other words, the notion of a name change, certainly in Tanakh, is indicative of a fundamental allegiance to whoever is changing your name. I'll give you an example. With this in mind, we can understand a whole new dimension to the story of Brit Milah. Because the story of Brit Milah, when Avraham undergoes this circumcision, which is the quote-unquote sign of the covenant between God and Israel, it is accompanied by a name change. He has to change his name from Avram to Avraham and Sarai to Sarah. Why? Because the Brit Milah, understand what the Brit was. Megillat Esther. How are all of the servants of the king referred to in Megillat Esther? How is Shashgaz and Hegai referred to in Megillat Esther? Swiss Emelach. You have Swiss Paro as well. What does Swiss Emelach mean? Saris doesn't mean servant. What does Saris mean? No. Saris? Castrated. These are the people in charge of the king's harem. Remember? But it was standard practice in the ancient world. It was standard procedure to castrate the servants of the king. And all the servants of the king, from Swissei Paro to Swissei Melech Achashverosh, were castrated. It was an expression of total loyalty and devotion to the king. Comes along the Torah and says, it is absolutely forbidden to castrate your males. But circumcision carries the mark of the covenant and the loyalty and the servitude to God. The process of branding a servant gets mitigated, it gets transformed from the Swiss concept of the ancient pagan world into the Brit concept of the Torah. And in so doing, it is accompanied by a change of the name, because its whole purpose is to identify an allegiance and a loyalty. Yes?
I understand.
Why?
I think it's a more pejorative than...
Only in modern English. That's a modern sensitivity. In Moshe's case, in their case, he absolutely viewed himself as subservient with whole willingness and wholeheartedness. He saw himself as Misharet Moshe, without question, without hesitation. And it wasn't pejorative at all. It was just calling an apprenticeship. But the loyalty, the allegiance, was absolute 100%. The very core of his being, he would not move from Moshe's tent. He never moved. Moshe's going up the mountain, Yoshua will go up the mountain. Moshe goes into the tent of meeting, Yoshua goes into the tent of meeting. Yoshua lo yamish mitoch ha'oil. He will not move from the tent. Where Moshe goes, Yoshua goes. A shadow. Because that's the depth of the loyalty and the allegiance that Yoshua will show to his master. And his master is Moshe. And Moshe changes his name when he takes him on as a servant, and Yoshua gladly, willingly, lovingly calls, is identified by the name Yehoshua. Contrary to the position of the Ibn Ezra, that is an expression of Yoshua's humility, he goes back to the name Hosea. I think it's the other way around. I think that the humility that Yahushua shows is the fact that he continuously and constantly identifies himself as Yahushua, the name that Moshe gave him. I'll go one step further. Yes.
There's that strange pasuk about Moshe being a bridegroom of blood. All of a sudden, I wonder if that's why the circumcision was so important at that juncture.
Maybe I'd have to think through how it would relate to that particular episode, but it's a possibility. Well, let me show you something else. Not only are names significant, not only is the change of name significant, in Yahushua's case, the specific introduction of what name is used is also significant. Remember that it is standard practice to identify a person to when a name is changed, or when a name is taken on, especially in a leadership role, it was standard procedure to identify your loyalty to God in the name that you took on. So, for example, kings always took on new names because they wanted a name that reflected their loyalty to their deity. All the names of Babylonian kings and Persian kings reflect that loyalty to the deity. Vilmerudach comes from the Persian king Marduk, etc. And so it was in the world of Jewish kings as well. If you look at all the names of all the kings and the Nevi'im and the significant personalities in biblical history, you'll find that so many of them have a name that reflects some combination of Yud-Heh. Yehoahaz, Chizkiyahu, Yoshiyahu, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Chezkel. You go on and on. That was Tzidkiyahu, the list. In fact, some of them, when they veer to the world of idolatry, in some places they lose that description. So Uzziyahu becomes Uzziyah. And Yehoash becomes Yoash. Sometimes that hey, the Navi took away that hey, because he doesn't deserve it. You have an interesting phenomenon. In the beginning of Pashat Va'era, very interesting dialogue. And if you want to know, in my opinion, when Yahushua's name is changed, I think this is it. Although I have no proof to that. But I'll show you why I say so. Take a look at the beginning of Pashat Va'era. There's a very strange dialogue between Moshe and the Ribbono Shel Olam.
Did you say you think the name
will change
at this point?
I'll show you. I'm going to show you in a second.
No.
The whole thesis here of the Rashbam is that the name is not changed with the Meraglim. It's changed the moment Moshe designates Yehoshua as his disciple, which is way back before Pashat Peshavach. Why it's mentioned in the context of the Meraglim, I haven't explained yet. I will. Okay, these two stories need to be identified. In other words, if the thesis is correct, I need to answer the critical question, which is why is he called Hoshea in two places in Chumash? And that will be, I will glean that I answer that question in the last 5 minutes of Kedeshia. I have to leave you with a punchline, otherwise. All right. Take a look at the beginning of Pashat Va'era. Moshe had gone to Paro the first time his mission failed. Paro told him to make bricks without straw. Very frustrating moment in Moshe's purpose and mission. And he turns to God and he complains and he says, why did you send me? Why did you send me? And says, nothing good has come of it. It's only bad. Beginning of Peshat Va'era, which is Perek Vav, starting with Pasuk Bet. Shemot 6:2. Vayedaber Elokim al Moshe vayomer elav, Ani Hashem. God comes to Moshe and he says, I am Hashem. Yudke Vavke. Tell me something we don't know. Vayere el Avraham el Yitzchak vel Yaakov bekel Shakai. When I appeared to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, I appeared with the name Kel Shakai. Ushmi Hashem lo nodati lehem. But my name, Hashem, I did not make known to them. Now, And I establish my covenant with them. I promise them the land of Canaan. And I remember my covenant. Lachen amor b'nei Yisrael. Thus, therefore, you should say to your b'nei Yisrael, Ani Hashem. Second time. I am Hashem. I will take you out of the land of Egypt. Votzeiti etchem mitachat tzivlot Mitzrayim. It's out there for expressions of redemption. And the whole story ends in Pasuk Chet with the expression again of Ani Hashem. And the Mefarshim struggle with this phrase. God appeared to the Avot, Bekel Shakai. He didn't appear with the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. What's going on here? Big deal. So I'll show you something very interesting. Take a look at the names. The names of the Nesi'im in the beginning of Parashat Bamidbar. Bamidbar chapter 1, starting with Pasuk Hey 5. These are the names of the Nisi'im, the names of the tribal leaders of each of the tribes of Israel. Elitzur ben Shteur. Tribe of Reuven will be led by a man by the name of Elitzur ben Shteur. Shimon, Shtumiyah ben Tzvi Shaddai. Actually, let's do it differently. Somebody read me the names. Just the names. I don't care what tribe, just the names. From the beginning, from Reuven.
Elitzur ben
Shteur.
Next.
Shimon
ben
Zvi Shaddai.
Next.
Nachshon ben Aminadab. I'm going to leave that Nachshon ben Aminadab for now. Next. I don't need all of them. Trust me, I don't need all of them. Go on.
Netanel ben
Zvi. Zayin.
Yes.
Next.
Eliav.
Eliav
ben
Chelon. Next.
Eliyahu ben Amihud.
Gamliel
ben
Amihud. Next.
Gamliel
ben Tadatzur.
Adidan ben Gidoni.
Adam ben Gidoni, okay.
Achiezer ben Amishadai.
Achiezer ben Amishadai.
Pagiel
ben
Afran.
Okay, must be. You get the point?
Yep.
Eli Tzur ben Shteur, Shlumiel ben Tzuri Shaddai, Netanel ben Tzuar, Eliav ben Chelon, Elishama ben Amihud, Gamliel ben Pedatzur, Achiezer ben Amishadai, Pagiel ben Ochran. I was known to the Avot as Kel Shakai. The name we are so familiar with, and the names of all of the leadership and all of the kings, Yohanatan and Yoachaz and Yirmiyahu and Chizkiyahu, almost all the names. Are a reflection of Kel Shakai. From Yitzhak Mitzrayim and on, the relationship changes. The whole story of what the name Kel Shakai represents and what Yud Kei Vav Kei represents, not my issue for now. But the name changes. That's the message of the parsha here. The name of God, the operative name that we will identify God with from now on, changes. Now it's Shem Hashem. Who is the first person in biblical history to earn the title Yud Hey in their name? Yehoshua. When Moshe changes Hoshea to Yehoshua, suddenly there's a new dynamic. Moshe changes his name as an expression of loyalty to God. Moshe didn't change his name to express Yeshua's loyalty to Moshe. Moshe changed his name to the Shem Hashem, to show loyalty to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But in the eyes of the people, in the eyes of Yeshua, it's a badge of honor that has two levels. certainly God's name, the new name that we know God as now from this point forward, Yehoshua, but also the loyalty to Moshe, because it was Moshe who changed his name. So I have one question left. Why here? Why suddenly does it go back to Hosea here? So let's leave out Shirat HaZinu for a moment.
That's the big mystery. All I have is the story of the Meraglim.
Why does the Torah identify him as Hosea? And I need the Torah to go out of its way to tell me, oh, by the way, this Hosea, it's the same Yehoshua that we already are familiar with from Peshat Beshalach. We should know that Moshe changed his name earlier. Not Yehoshua.
Maybe because the he owned it by his own, not because he is as Moshe
said. Because Yehoshua's role is the in the story of Parshat Shlach is not the role of Misharet Moshe. He is anointed. He is appointed as the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim. He's not chosen as the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim because he's Moshe's servant. He's chosen as the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim because he is the grandson of Elishama ben Amihud, Nasi of Shevet Ephraim. And so he's identified by his family lineage. His status there is not Misharet Moshe. His status there is Hoshea ben Nun, grandson of Elishama ben Amihud, Nasi of Shevet Ephraim. Independent. Completely unrelated to his relationship to Moshe.
So
he's identified, whether he goes back to it or not, it's not my issue. The Torah goes back to calling him Hosea. Because that's his name as he stands by himself as Nasi of Shevet Ephraim, unrelated to his position as the loyal servant of Moshe. Hosea the leader, Hosea the head of the tribe, Hosea the independent, Hosea ben Nun. Grandson of Elishama ben Amihud, not Yehoshua ben Nun Misharet Moshe. He's going on the mission of the Meraglim is a completely different identity. Drop the title. And then the Torah has to tell us, we need to know that it's the same Yehoshua. But his role here is a very different role. Fascinatingly enough, he comes back, and how is he called? For the rest of the story in Parshat Shlach.
Yehoshua.
And the rest of Chumash. Now we go back to the rest of the story. What was listed here? Moshe anoints him as his successor. He calls him Yehoshua. Moshe charges him. Chazak v'amatz. He calls him Yehoshua. Moshe says to him, you will divide the land. He calls him Yehoshua. The last place in Chumash that Yehoshua's name is mentioned is Shirat HaAzinu. Shirat HaAzinu is Moshe's last message to the people. It's the last words he speaks to them. And he stands before them and he says this great shira. And it says that the shira was articulated in stereo by Moshe and Hosea ben Nun. How did we get back to Hosea ben Nun? Because it's that moment. It's that moment that Hosea ben Nun is the new leader of Israel. It's the end of Moshe's era. It's the beginning of Yehoshua's era. And he's no longer Misharet Moshe. He's no longer Moshe's servant. He's no longer subordinate to Moshe. He is, in that moment, that is the transition of power. That is the moment that Hosea stands up and is told, you are now the leader of the Jewish people. You can go back to your own name and your own identity and your own position and your own hat and your own title. Moshe is out of the picture now. You're on your own. And the Torah calls him Hosea ben Nun. The last reference in Chumash to this man is the moment that the mantle of leadership transfers from Moshe to the person who had been his whole life, Yehoshua Misharet Moshe. And from this point forward, he will be the leader of the Jewish people on his own. And so he goes back to the title of
Hoshea ben Nun, at least as far as the Torah is concerned. Now look what happens. Now let's go back to Sefer Yehoshua. All of this was to get us back to the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, right? Two chapters later. That was chapter 32 of Chumash, chapter 33 and 34. Then we get to Yehoshua, chapter 1. Now I want to reread that opening sentence. And with this we will conclude. Vayhi acharei mot Moshe Eved Hashem. It was after the death. You missed the punchline. It was after the death of Moshe. And how is Moshe described? Eved Hashem. Vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua ben Nun Misharet Moshe Lemot. God spoke to Yehoshua ben Nun, Moshe's servant. I thought we said he's independent. He's no longer Misharet Moshe. He's no longer living in Moshe's shadow. He's independent. He's on his own. Next sentence. Moshe Avdi Met. Moshe, my servant, has died. Yehoshua, get the picture? Moshe's gone. Who is it? You are. Ata kum avorta yarden hazeh. Now take these people and move them forward. Ata v'chol ha'am hazeh la'at asher nechinaten lahem livnei Yisrael. You and all these people. Everywhere you go, I will give you. As I was with you, as I was with my servant Moshe, I will be with you. Lists the borders of Israel. Tells him chazak v'yamatz 3 times. We'll come back to it. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayitzav Yehoshua et Shotrei Ha'am Limud. He will be referred to as Yehoshua for the rest of Sefer Yehoshua and for the rest of Tanakh. So you'll say to me, I just thought we said that once he's independent, he's Hoshea. The answer?
Eved Hashem, that's his lineage,
Eved
Hashem, and Hashem.
One step further.
That first is referring, Moshe is my Eved, he's the Eved of Moshe, so now he's mine, and he keeps that name as my, in Kesher and Hashem.
That's something you're saying. Let's take one step further. I don't think it's a Kesher to Hashem that's the issue here.
Was he just renamed again?
No.
Is Yehoshua?
What did Rashi say at the end? Expression of Yehoshua's humility. Yehoshua will forever identify himself as Yehoshua, Misharet Moshe.
That's his choice?
That's his choice. He will forever maintain his linkage to Moshe. He can't be the leader of the Jewish people in that generation and not see himself as Moshe's disciple. His whole credibility, his whole position, his whole loyalty, his stature, his appointment, everything he is, every fiber of his being, is defined by the fact that he was and will forever be loyal to his master. He is the disciple of Moshe from the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua till the end of his life. He will be buried as Yehoshua ben Nun. On his kever, it will be written Yehoshua ben Nun. It will not be written Hoshea. He will not let it. Yehoshua learned many things from Moshe. One of the things he learned was his humility. Ayish Moshe nav mikol adam. To identify Yehoshua from the very beginning as Yehoshua and not Hoshea is the loudest expression of loyalty that Yehoshua could ever make to his master, to his teacher, to his Moshe Rabbeinu, in every sense of the term. And that's the starting point for Sefer Yehoshua. When we study Sefer Yehoshua, one of the things that we will look at is the shadow that Moshe Rabbeinu casts over the early years of Yehoshua's leadership. It's a huge shadow. And it will take Yehoshua years till he's able to emerge from that shadow, not necessarily because he wants to, because he has to. But even when he stands on his own, even when he emerges from that shadow, even when he weans the people off of the Moshe Rabbeinu model of leadership,
he will forever remain Yehoshua. Pnei Moshe kepnei Achama, pnei Yehoshua kepnei Levana. Moshe was the sun, Yehoshua was the moon, and he will reflect Moshe's light for his entire life. Adkan.